Vicki Booker here, and welcome to Find Your Soul, Find Your Soulmate. It's my podcast. I am the host. We talk about relationships. We talk about love. We talk about evolutionary psychology and how that affects dating. We talk about, we talk about all kinds of stuff. I'm really excited about this episode. I've been reading this book called Hardwiring Happiness. And so I talk about how to be happy, man. Like, we all go through periods of time in our life where we're struggling to be happy, whether you're one of those people who has been unhappy your whole life and you just want to figure out how to be happy, or maybe you're one of those people who you've had something happen to you recently and you just need some help getting out of it, or maybe you suffer from anxiety and your anxiety is through the roof and you need to figure out a way to, you know, take it down 10,000 notches. This episode is going to be helpful to you. We talk about how to be happy, how to be happy. I hope you enjoy it. So I started reading this book a few days ago, or a couple days ago, and it's called Hardwiring Happiness. And it was recommended to me from a woman who's in my mastermind group. And it's by Rick Hansen. He has a PhD in neuropsychology, which super fascinating. And I studied a little bit of this in college. I took a physiology of the brain. I found it fascinating learning about neurons and synapses and all of the chemicals in our brain and how that affects our thinking. And I find all of that extremely fascinating. And so, you know, I was going through, well, I had this book recommended to me a while back, and I've been going through some personal stuff. It's been a really difficult time, and I can't get into the details of it, unfortunately. Normally, I'm happy to share everything about me and all the stupid things I've done and all of the crap that's come my way and how I've dealt with it. But this has to do with other people in my life, so it's not really my story to tell. And so I have to be, you know, sensitive to that. But I was really finding myself just in a bad place. And it happens to all of us, right? I don't care how positive you are. I don't care how great your life is going. At some point, something happens. Something happens and you're faced with something difficult, right? Something that you have to deal with. And so this happened to me. And I had a good month where I was really, really struggling. And I had to figure out how to get myself out of it. And so a while back, my friend recommended this book to me. And it already sounded really interesting to me because I am interested in neuropsychology and evolutionary psychology. And what's so great about this book is it takes evolutionary psychology and neuropsychology and it kind of explains it together. So I was reading this book and my mind was just blown. I mean, and I'm only to page 60. So I'm going to share with you 60 pages, right? And I've got about 200 more to go. But I'm going to share with you today some of the information that I've gotten out of it. Again, I was not in a good place. I found myself just continuously in this negative loop, right? This negative mental loop, which we've talked about before. And I had to figure out how to get out of it. I can tell you by the first 20 pages after reading this book, I was already happier and thinking more positively and already getting myself into a better mental state. So I think it's amazing. So the basic premise behind it, and again, let me tell you the name of the book. It's called Hardwiring Happiness by Rick Hansen. So how he describes it is that your brain is like a garden. And I'm going to be honest with you. When I first started reading that, I'm like, I don't really like these kind of, I don't know, airy, fairy, fluffy, unicorn-like, your brain is like a garden. It was kind of not my thing, but I really like that he described it that way because it helped as I was reading the book. It really helped me to be able to apply some of the concepts that he was talking about when I thought about it like that. So basically, your brain is like a garden. So what can you do in a garden, right? And what are the goals of this garden? You want to plant flowers, right? You want to plant flowers, and you don't want to let a lot of weeds to grow in your garden, right? So if you're thinking about your brain like a garden, you think planting flowers is positive thoughts and letting the weeds grow, those are allowing negative thoughts to consume you. And so he talks about how and why it's so hard to overcome negative thinking, which, as we know, negative thinking leads to anxiety, stress, mental illness, physical illness. I mean, nothing good, right? So he talks about how and why it's hard to overcome negative thinking. And he talks about it as it relates to evolutionary psychology. And remember, evolutionary psychology says that our brains are only as evolved enough to deal with what our ancestors faced and not of this, you know, quickly changing world. So he talks about evolutionary psychology and he ties that back into neuropsychology. And so the reason why we have a hard time overcoming this negative thinking is what he calls negativity bias. And negativity bias is something that our brains evolved in order to survive. So it's normal, right? And negativity bias is the default setting on the Stone Age brain because, right, it was either eat or be eaten then, right? It wasn't, you know, you were just trying to live. You were just trying to survive, you know? So our brains are evolved to pay attention to the negative. We pay more attention to the negatives and we're always scanning for threats, right? We're always scanning for that predator who's going to eat us because remember that the negative stimuli, we react to the negative stimuli more because if we don't, then we're dead, right? And the positive stimuli like fruit, picking some lovely fruit and companionship of a loved one, you know, those were great things, but they weren't, we were just trying to survive. Survival was the key. So we always had to be constantly scanning for negative stimuli. So our brains have adapted over time to give more focus and attention to the negative in order to survive. So I'm going to be quoting him a lot in this. Some of it I put into my own words, but some of it I love how he explains it. And there's no need to really take away, but I'm trying to summarize it, what I read. So then he goes into neuroplasticity. So you know the saying, like, just to make it easy, right? What you think about, you bring about. So when you think about something, you're strengthening those neural connections. So if you're thinking about positive things, you're strengthening those positive memories, right? Those positive feelings. If you're thinking about negative things all the time, you're just strengthening those negative ones as well. So what you think about, you bring about. And so he talks about neural strengthening. And so he explains how the brain is the organ that learns and it's designed to be changed by your experiences. And so your brain's firing neurons whenever you think. And he says neurons that fire together, wire together. So if you practice relaxation repeatedly and you really focus on relaxing and living in the moment for a prolonged period of time, then that will leave an imprint in your neural structure. And then he has all these little funny sayings he says. He also says your mental states become your neural traits. And because of this negativity bias, we work harder at creating those positive neural changes or imprints. We have to work harder because our brains are evolved basically to think negatively. That's how our brains have been conditioned. That's because that's what our ancestors had to do. And our brains don't evolve as quickly as this fast changing world, right? So how do you change this, right? How do you think more positively? And he had this at the very beginning of the book, and I loved it. And he said, just these four words alone, they affected my day immediately. He says, have it, enjoy it. Have it, and enjoy it. And this is called when you, it's called self-directed neuroplasticity. That's what he calls it. So you have to make a conscious effort to focus and look for those things that are happening in your day, right? It's so much easier because our brains have evolved to seek out all the negativity and all the threats and all the potential harmful things that we have to really, really make point to not only identify the positives, because some of us have a hard enough time even identifying the positive things that are happening. We're so fixated on all the things that went wrong that day, but we're not looking for the positives. And the positives can be something as simple as your child laughing, which they do every day. If you pay attention, they pretty much do every day. And instead of, you know, oh, that's cute and moving on with your day, right? It's have it. Have that moment where your child is happy and enjoy it. And you have to rest there for a while. You have to actually take it in and experience it. And what's happening while you're doing that is you're strengthening those neural pathways. And that's what's called self-directed neuroplasticity. That's what he says. And he says you have to turn everyday good experiences into good neural structure. And again, remember, he says the brain is the organ that learns and it's designed to be changed by your experiences, which is amazing because that means that you do have the power to do that. It just takes more work and it takes more conscious living and living in the moment. And it takes more, like he says, self-directed. You have to really make a point to look for those things. And he says that bit by bit and synapse by synapse, you can overcome this negativity bias so that you can live a more fulfilled and happy life. And it's tough to do. Again, remember, if you tend to think negatively, there's nothing wrong with you. It's very normal. Your ancestors survived for a reason, right? You're living in a state of survival. But you just have to remember, it is tough to do. It's tough to get out of that, but it's not impossible. And the reason is the negative stimuli, he explains, are perceived faster and easier than positive. It's easier to identify threats. Threats are more obvious. We feel them more. Our brains have evolved into releasing chemicals that make us feel it more. It's not just what you're thinking about. It's your body's reaction to the chemicals that your brain is releasing. So you're just living in survival mode. I personally suffer from anxiety. I have my entire life. It's something that I've had to deal with. I've said that before. I've had panic attacks. I overcame them through cognitive therapy. I still have anxiety, and it's because it's that survival mode. And so when I have something, I'm pretty good at staying positive, but because I have anxiety, when something huge happens in my life, that's extremely stressful or I don't want to say traumatic, but slightly traumatic to traumatic, my brain reacts a little bit more. I like to say crazy, but that's okay. I'm not crazy. I have anxiety. And a lot of people have that actually. And there's a stigma associated with it. That's dumb. But anyway, that's a whole other podcast episode. But he says that we often learn faster from pain than from pleasure. And again, it's this negativity bias that our brains developed in the Stone Age so that we could survive. It was eat or be eaten. And so what's pretty neat about this too is it's not like a dating and relationship book, but he does have moments that he talks about dating and relationships and how this can affect, you know, your relationships that you have. And he says that the lasting intimate relationships generally need at least 5 positive interactions to balance every 1 negative interaction. That's a 5-to-1 ratio. I mean, that's kind of crazy. 5-to-1. That means if you have a fight with your spouse, right? Or you get snarky with each other one day, or you get a look you don't like, or, you know, even the little bitty things that probably don't mean anything because we're probably just in a bad mood ourselves. But every negative interaction you have to now create 5 positive interactions. to balance it out. I think that's pretty fascinating, and it's something to remember in your relationships. So, how do we think more positively, right? How do we do this? I mean, it's one thing to know that we need to do it, but the hard part is actually getting it done. And I haven't even gotten into the hows of this yet, but I'm going to still talk about some of the concepts, and I'll have to come back and do maybe a part two to this. But he says that in order for this to happen, you have to keep resting your brain and your mind on a positive experience. So when I talked about enjoying your child laugh, right? You have to rest on it. Take a rest on it. Take a moment. Take it in. It can't be like a fleeting thought. That's not giving your brain enough time to do that neural imprint, as he calls it. Rest. You have to be in resting mode. And he actually color codes it. So just to make it even easier, the book does get into some specifics on the different chemicals in the brain and the different parts of the brain. And I'll go into it a little bit just where I think it kind of proves the point, and it's super fascinating. But don't let that deter you from reading the book, because the way he explains it, he lays it out pretty easily, and the whole book isn't like that. There's just certain parts of it. And if you don't really care as much about that stuff, you just kind of read through it. But the meat of it is not super, super, physiological or whatever. He color codes it. He calls it the green brain versus the red brain. Green, good, right? Garden. Red brain, bad, right? Red alert. So green is responsive mode. And that's the mode that you want to be in. And red brain, bad, is reactive mode, where we're simply reacting. And he explains how these are our brain's two main operating systems, green responsive mode and red reactive mode. So responsive mode, when we live in responsive mode, we're able to meet challenges without them becoming stressors. We're not disturbed by the threat or the loss or the rejection. That's how he explains it. And it settles into a resting state. So, you know that person, and I've been this person at times. I wasn't the past month because I was dealing with some unknown things that I'd never had to deal with before. But there did come a point in my life where after my divorce, I had enough experiences with certain, concepts of life, whatever you want to call it, where if someone else was faced with it, they might still be in that reactive mode. But I was now in responsive mode. I didn't let things stress me out that used to stress me out. So he also describes responsive mode as your brain having a shock absorber, which I thought was really neat. So it's a good way to describe it. It's like your brain is taking this stuff on, but instead of it breaking and completely falling apart, it's got a little shock absorber. It's able to handle more things that come at it because of this. And again, it's because you're taking on the good. You're focusing on the positive. You're imprinting on your brain those positive experiences. You're focusing on the positives, and this releases those really great chemicals in your brain, endorphins, dopamine, and this gets your brain into a better state so that you can handle things because your neural networks are no longer in a state of deficit or disturbance. That's how he calls it. So it's all about your mindset, and it's not, it's so much about your body too, because your mindset is going to determine the chemicals and things that are going to be released into your brain. And when you have endorphins and dopamine, again, he says you can handle stuff better. You're in a better state of mind. You're better able to handle things that come your way. And the more you do this, think positive and have it and enjoy it, as he says, the more you strengthen those neural pathways. Fascinating. So reactive mode, right? Red zone. This is when you are I'm living in a state of panic, basically, and you're continuously scanning for any perceived threat. So think about it like when you go to the airport, right? And they had the color coding of the terrorist threat, right? Red was red zone, you know, that's the highest perceived threat. This is basically what our brains are walking around doing subconsciously, conscious, whatever. But this is how our brains have evolved, right? Because of that negativity bias. So we're consciously, or we're conscious. Now I'm getting to where I can't talk. We're constantly scanning for a perceived threat. And when you're living in that reactive mode, what's happening in your brain, he says, is the amygdala sends an alarm to both your hypothalamus to release stress hormones and to your sympathetic nerve system for hyperarousal of the fleeing or fighting. And not the good kind of arousal. Basically that flee or fight. Hide or flight. What's that mode? Fight or flight. So think about that. What mode that you're living in, your brain is doing different things dependent upon that. And obviously, if you're living in reactive mode and you're getting stress hormones released and you're in that hyper state of fight or flight, you're not going to be able to make really great choices, right? Or you won't be able to think as clearly to get to a better end result as fast as you could be able to and feel good about that. And to me, this makes sense because when I get in my heightened state, when my anxiety is at its worst, I have to find a way to bring it back down because I can't operate at that level. I'm in like panic mode, heightened panic. My brain is reacting and focusing more on the panic and the fact how my body's feeling because it's panicking that I can't even address why I'm panicking to begin with. It's pretty stupid, but hey. So to me, that makes a lot of sense that if you practice living in that responsive mode, that positive mode, and as opposed to this reactive mode, then your brain is doing different things. And what your brain does is something that happens in your body and it's chemicals being released in your body. And that's obviously going to affect how you feel, the decisions you make. So this reactive mode, you're basically acting on alert. You're on guard. That sounds exhausting, being constantly on guard. Because the thing is, and this is what he talks about that is so cool, and I'll get to it in a minute, but what he says, instead of a negativity bias, you have to develop a responsivity bias. And over time, he says, if you continue to focus on the positive and you allow it into your life, you have to allow it. Don't forget that. Some people don't feel deserving, right? We don't feel like we deserve good things. Or if something good happens to us, we're like, well, that was a fluke. Well, that only happened because, you know, we downplay it. No, allow good things to happen in your life. Good things should happen in everybody's life. You should just believe that. Good things should happen in everybody's life. You have to allow it. You have to be open to it. And you have to enjoy it. Don't downplay it. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. Savor it like you would savor a delicious whatever your favorite food is, savor it so that you can retrain your brain and you can go from that negativity bias to that responsivity bias. He says you have to learn to stimulate those feelings of feeling safe. He says you have to learn to stimulate those feelings of feeling satisfied and feeling connected. He says you have to stimulate the feelings of feeling safe, satisfied, and connected. You have to have it and enjoy it. So for me, that means recognize it when it's happening and stop and smell damn roses. Stop and enjoy it so that your brain focuses on it long enough for it to start creating those new neural pathways. And so I'll just end it here. I'm going to definitely do a follow-up as I continue to do this, because read this book. I mean, I can't, there's so much good stuff in it. So I'll just end it here with what I was reading this part of the book, and Rob came in. I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Just blew my mind. So he talks about how we're kind of, I guess, at a crossroads in our evolution. You know, now conditions are better, right? Our brains aren't evolved for the conditions that we have now. They're evolved enough to handle super harsh conditions. That's why we're living in that negativity bias, right? We're constantly scanning, but we don't have to constantly scan anymore. It's not eat or be eaten anymore, right? That's not that our conditions aren't so harsh. We're not living in constant danger of a predator. We're not living in constant pain because we don't have medicine and, you know, technology. And we're not living in constant hunger. Like, if you didn't go out and physically kill something, you were going to starve. It's a lot easier to get food now, right? We don't have as much loss because, again, you know, we have medicine, we have vaccines, we have this technology that's afforded us these longer lives that we can live. Society has evolved. Technology has evolved. Our culture has evolved. We're not living in such dire need anymore, but our brains are still functioning as though we are. But now our lifespans are longer, right? Back then, our lifespans were shorter. We had to be more negativity bias, shorter lifespan, eat or be eaten. Now we live longer. The costs, he says, and I think it's fascinating, the costs of the reactive mode, the red zone mode that we live in, greatly outweigh the benefits now, because we don't need to be on such high alert anymore. And just wait for it. This was the thing that blew my mind. I know I keep saying this, but I'm like totally geeking out again after reading this. He says that one of the brain's major design features for passing on genes, right? So survival of the fittest and the like, but he calls it one of the brain's major design features. He says, negativity bias that feeds survival, right? It's that negativity bias that feeds survival. That's a major design feature of our brain based on what we needed in the Stone Age, right? But now it's a design flaw or somewhat of a bug in the 21st century. I think that that's just absolutely fascinating. Thanks for listening today. I would love to hear your comments. I think the next part of the book gets more into the hows. This really was more why, a little bit of how, you know, how to think more positively. I can't wait to read it. And I will definitely share that with you. Thanks so much for listening. You can visit me at nikkibooker.com for more information about any of the stuff I've talked about today. I have a blog. And if you like what you heard today, please subscribe and please leave a review. That would be amazing. Thanks again and take care.